I'm Simon Mayle, Event Director of Proud Experiences, and this is my Smack episode.
Hi world, and welcome to Smack. I'm Philip Ibrahim. Because it is Pride Month, I had the immense honor to sit and talk with my friend Simon Mayle, Event Director of ILTM and the Proud Experiences. We talked about the importance of customized experiences for LGBTI travelers in the luxury segment, why brands' values in this industry are so crucial, and which Pride event he is looking forward to the most. Enjoy the show and happy Pride. Simon, welcome to Berlin. I cannot say how happy I am to have you here in Berlin, in real person, life, not digital. That is so amazing. So great that we sit here. Happy to welcome you here.
Thank you, Philip. And I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you. You said, come to Berlin. And I'm a planner. And a year later, here I am.
Yeah, we're going to touch on this later. Your trip is not as long as we might suppose from your accent, because you are by origin a British citizen, which could be a bit easier to come, but you don't live in Europe anymore.
No. So I live in Brazil 10 years, 10 and a half years.
Lucky you.
Became the cliche, went for 6 months, fell in love with Brazil first, and then, of course, with a Brazilian.
You said the cliche. Have you been the first one in the family, or is there somebody else doing this?
No, I'm definitely a first. My family are all North Englanders. They're all good Northerners. I'm the only one who ran away as quickly as I could.
10 years is a long time already. I mean, before we touch what you really do, probably, how do you do that with the time difference? Is there still a lot of connection towards the old world? Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I'm an early riser. So I'm one of those people who gets up and I get going. So 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm at my desk chatting away.
Because at 3 o'clock, you have to be at the beach.
Exactly.
Yeah. That must be a reason to move. Simon, probably to give the audience a bit an idea why we're together. So there's one thing. I mean, you're an absolutely travel expert, and I can say proudly that you have been changing and shaping the travel world for quite a while already. I'm lucky enough to have been a partner of yours already for years, working together with the Proud Experience and those things that you do for the LGBTIQ travel world. I hate to say it's a niche, because it's stupid to say it's not a niche anymore. It's a huge market. And Especially if I come over to the States and I see what you guys are producing there and doing there, it's quite obvious that a lot of companies might have already recognized this. But probably tell us a bit on what you do and what you're organizing there.
Goodness. Big question. And it's an honor to be called a travel expert by you. I guess, you know, going way back, it all started. My parents actually met in a travel agency in the 1970s in Chester in northwest England. Thomas Cook, nonetheless.
They met in the agency.
They both worked in the travel agency.
See?
So born into a family of travel.
Second generation, there you go.
Didn't end up in travel at first, ended up in events organization, and then kind of got closer and closer to the world of travel. And then 14 years ago plus, ended up in the luxury travel world, and organizing what is the Cannes Film Festival or the Paris Fashion Week of the luxury travel industry. Really since I joined there in 2010, we talk about authentic experiences and experiences and people traveling for experiences. And we talk about, really, in the luxury world, how to micro-personalize experiences, make people feel like they're the most important people to walk through your door that day, or really understand intuitively what makes a guest tick, what are their interests. And then, you know, we realized that far too often these micro-personalized experiences were not filtering down to LGBTQ travelers. So the LGBTQ traveler's experience was not the same as the heteronormative counterpart. And when you're paying, let's say, 1,000 euros a night, it's outrageous, really, that it's not.
Absolutely.
So we created an event called Proud Experiences. And Proud Experiences is a B2B travel trade event that introduces the world's best hotels, destination premium hotels, premium destinations, luxury hotels, cruise lines, on-the-ground experience organizers, inbound tour operators, to travel advisors who have a high proportion of LGBTQ travelers. That may be that they have 30% of their book of business might be LGBTQ clients, because they perhaps are more specialized in the fashion, arts, architecture, design industries clientele. Or it may be that they have one client who, you know, travels four times a year, spending $250,000 per trip, and it's an LGBTQ client. So you've got to hit the nail on the head with that client.
And they need to bring new things all the time, ideas and stuff. Huh?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's when we talk about travel agents and travel advisors, the whole, for me, the most important role of them is to push your clients out of their comfort zone and continually surprise them. Because that's what travel is about. So we put these two people together to sit down and have a conversation about the about their clients and how to make that experience truly personalized and you know, exceed their expectations. The alongside that, we create a lot of content. So the content really, we set the scene, which was with you this year, at the big opening, the big gathering, where we talk about the emotional why behind everything, as well as the financial why. It kind of gets everyone in the mindset and the context of, why does this matter? Why is this still relevant? Why is this still a conversation? You know, and my opening words are, not everyone is fortunate enough to live in great metropolises like Berlin, London, New York, or LA. And there's still a lot of change that needs to happen, whether it be the fact there's still some 64 plus countries that criminalize homosexuality, which is crazy.
I always think about that. The audience might know, you know it anyway. When I did start with Pink Pillow back in the days, and we looked at that, we had an advisor was from Australia. Ian Johnson might know from out now, and he told me when he went out and came out, it was still a punishment in Australia to be open on the street, gay, hand in hand, holding a man's hand. In my head, this clicked. There's a person sitting with me. He fought for a right not to go in prison, just to be able to love who he wants to love. And that was something that was so strong in me. And I have to give it immediately back to you, because I've been so happy to be at Proud Experience so many times already. And every time I'm there, I'm so inspired by those stories. And I remember Dame Kelly being there last year. And she said that she was in a closet for 30 years until she was able to come out in that little English village. I want to say village. I don't know where she's from, but
it's true.
Crazy. True. Mm. Crazy.
So, you know, I was speaking about my parents earlier. My dad is actually gay.
No way.
Yeah. When they met in the 1970s, it was illegal to be gay. I'm quite sure. In the UK, or equal rights were not anywhere near at that point. So he was married to my mum for 23 years until, until he left her for a man 23 years later. And I look back at this all the time, because I see kind of the baggage and the trauma that my dad still carries from being in the closet until older than me. I think he was 47 when he finally came out. And I look at how my life has evolved and how open and free we are, especially in a city like Berlin here.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, my partner's sister, who's a lesbian, called to let us know that they're having their second child. And we're like, that's how things have changed.
Yeah.
Looking from my father's generation, where it wasn't even okay to be out in terms of the travel industry, which is madness. We know how many LGBTQ people there are in the travel industry. To my world, where I feel like we've come such a long way that I'm now organizing an LGBTQ event.
And it's not small. Probably give some numbers. I mean, we were how
many? Sure, 550 people. Yeah, 550 people this year, which was fantastic. And it eats a broad range of stuff. I always say to everyone, it's not a gay show.
No, I can confirm. It's not a gay. Well, it's sometimes funny, because you still have similar discussions. You have different stages of experience in dealing with the LGBTIQ world. Let's put it that way. Some of the questions are quite junior. Yeah. And then after or off the hours, you have conversations on a level that is so high, where it's so personal sometimes. So it's super, so inspiring is a word I'm going to use quite often in this conversation, I'm pretty sure.
I like someone used the example of the US is 5G when it comes to LGBTQ, their knowledge, their, whereas, you know, somewhere in Brazil might be 4G, and somewhere Estonia, our friends from Estonia, refer to, might be 3G in terms of their level of knowledge of the LGBTQ market.
And we can touch that later on, because Europe definitely has a different, I mean, the perspective, or the Europeans, Germans, everybody thinks we're so far ahead, which we are, but then there is moments where you think, in the States, there's a random situation where anybody will say, my pronouns are this and this, and it's not talked about. If you do this on a stage in Germany, you immediately would be having like a clear signage on you.
And
gender speech is a huge topic. Probably we can speak about that later. But hey, so UK guy living in Brazil, organizing his major event in the States. I mean, travel is part of your daily work, I would say.
Sure.
You do more than the show, The Proud Experience. I know that, because what we found out, I posted a picture of you on my social feeds, and my best friend, who's working in the private plane industry, said, hey, isn't that the guy who organized the event in Cannes as well, the luxury event in Cannes? And then I said, yeah, I think so. And I asked you, so I was not even aware of that. So there's more that you do, huh?
So, that was how it all came about. It was my first love, first passion. I'm the event director of two other events, which are both called ILTMs, which is the terminology for International Luxury Travel Market. Mm-hmm. So we have our global event, which takes place in Cannes, which is the most iconic of them all. And then I run the one that we have in the Bahamas for the North American market, and in São Paulo, where I am, for the Latin American travel agent market. So, yeah, they're amazing shows, and I literally found my dream job when I got that, and then it just got even better with Proud Experiences.
It's crazy, because one of the words that was really probably not haunting me is the wrong one, but the word experience in every term of hospitality has been, I would say, in the last 10 years a trend, if it's still a trend, I don't know, but changing experience in whatever thing, and for you this is part of the basic DNA of what you do. I like what you said, that you are creating those macro presentations or macro events with those travelers. Why do you think is the luxury travel in LGBT, I can only talk about LGBT, but probably somewhere else, so far ahead when it comes to this experience understanding?
So when we and I always say Proud Experiences is about all questions of diversity and inclusion. So the messages that we have at those shows are relevant to race, they're relevant to size, shape, gender, etc. But disability, which is obviously a massive question in hospitality as well. But we focused on the LGBTQ market because there is a lot of money, particularly in the gay market. There's a gay men have traditionally been more out there and traveling wide. Why did they travel? Because it's the antithesis to close-mindedness. Travel to find like-minded people all around the world. Gay people have traditionally migrated to big cities because it's where they feel safest, most comfortable. They are normally dual income, no children, so they have lots of money to spend, and they like to spend it on travel. So it's been a massive market. They would travel 4 to 6 times a year, and they would spend, you know, on average a third more than their heteronormative counterparts.
And we see as well that they accept for this safety to pay probably a premium, which is one of the reasons why we always say there is a clear need as well for luxury or at least upscale brands to understand what they do. If I look in your Proud Experience, and I'm happily talking about it later still, I saw as well the development of your partners or the partners that are supporting you there. Being an 18-year Aqua veteran before I left the company, I have try to put a lot of things in place for LGBTQ, IQ. But I realized that we in Europe were a bit slower in the understanding than in North America. Uh-huh. Because when I came to the first show, I was still with Accor.
Yeah.
I already saw Accor being like a major partner there. This year already, I saw so many big brands, extra rooms for them.
Yeah.
So that is really amazing for me to see how this went. How are your conversations with those partners? How did they develop?
Amazing. All of them have been amazing since day one. I'm thrilled with Accor and the development there. There was a great guy, a guy from Guyana, who used to run the marketing. So he really kicked it off, Rick Harvey Lamb. And we've just seen them grow and grow, Accor. And of course, they've got so many brands that appeal across this market.
And especially now with the whole lifestyle segment being part of a huge, crucial part with Ennismore.
So the Soho hotels have been some of the most popular ones at Proud Experiences. I remember when Soho Paris opened, I think it was we were our last event in New York, so it was probably 2022. And I had a conversation. I would always ask the travel advisors, what was your best find at the show? What's the thing that you're most excited about? At the time, it was Soho Paris. This year, we were thrilled to have Soho Berlin, as well as Soho Vienna. So they're kind of the perfect properties, that kind of high-end lifestyle products that fit really well with Proud Experiences. But we had a great presence from Hyatt, who were super engaged.
Yeah.
And a great presence from Hilton as well, and Marriott, big sponsors. And it was very interesting. The Marriott conversation came up in one of the workshops, how it has evolved from a Mormon company into this great company of diversity and inclusion. And one I'm super proud of and very pleased that we have participating with us is Dorchester Collection. So they joined us for the first time this year. Dorchester Collection famously was boycotted because of the actions of the Sultan of Brunei in terms of, I think it was Sharia law in terms of homosexuality, which was reverted at the time. And you know, my personal opinion was I felt bad for the Dorchester Collection guys. I because I know most of them and I know what an LGBTQ-led company it is.
Plus, if we really look into the details of hospitality companies today, we will pretty sure end up at one point at a government that might be not the most supportive at 80% of those big chains.
I think the message was right and the protest was right. It was a general point. But
and it changes it from in between. Probably it helps as well, those understanding what it means. At the end, it's a profit business. Huh?
Exactly. And it's nice to see how full circle it's come. As well,
One thing, coming back to that, I saw, and I still, people know I'm not anymore the luxury type of guy. I probably neither traveling nor behaviors. Some of them might wish that I might be more luxury sometimes. But how could this event and the understanding be more attractive to those brands who might not be seeing themselves as top end luxury? You know, looking at 25 hours naming this brands, or there's others probably as well. They have a broader scope of what their understandings are. How could it be more attractive for them to showcase what they can do for the guests? Because very often I feel as well, knowing it from Pink Pillow, a lot of hotels just want to cater to guests. They're not really, they don't ask the question who and how they cater to. But how could it be more interesting for them to be parts of that?
Yeah, a great question. And I think the ironically to say there's a lot of preconception that goes along with the idea of luxury. And people hear the word luxury and they're like, ooh, billionaires only. It's exclusively for millionaires. You know, the most wonderful thing we see in luxury are people who save to go on a trip of a lifetime.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Celebration of a lifetime. Here we are at the Social Hub and there's so many luxury aspects of this hotel for me, whether it be the authenticity of the service, to the you really have thought of every single detail when it comes to lifestyle and values. So you kind of people really connect with values. Does that hotel represent my values? You know, I asked you, I was like, oh, I need to get my hair cut, my beard done. Do it at the hotel. It's there. Mm. We've got a place. Yeah, I just saw the donation for the clothes. I need to drop off some excess weight. Yeah. so, you know, all those kind of little touches are wonderful. I even love the hangers in the room that are very cleverly done so they stay nice. But there's quite often with the LGBTQ market these days, you'll see them do high-low. And it is a big trend in terms of luxury, the new generation of travelers. So, you know, on this, I'm on a massive trip right now. So, we'll stay in a real range of places the trip. So I'm going to a beautiful hotel, which was a proud experience. It's called Borgo Sant'Andrea, the Amalfi. I'll stay at the Savoy in London.
Nice.
Did
you have a tea at 5?
Of course. but then at the same time, I'll stay in some really simple places along the way. I like to mix it up, and I think that's all part of the luxury experience these days and very typical of an LGBTQ traveler.
And as well, it's one of the things that we always see that probably with the, there's still a way to go, but with the acceptance over the last 10 years as well, that I could see that being part of the LGBTI family is still a topic, but it's not the same topic like 10 years before, let's put it that way. And that means as well that the range of people who travel has been broadened, you know? Lot of times around me, I see people, they don't necessarily want to go in a gay-owned only hotel. They want to be accepted wherever they go. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right, in a destination like Berlin, it's a bit easier if you go somewhere in a small village around the way, doesn't matter which European destination, might be harder. Yeah. But for me, and that's what I always expand to my hotels in Berlin, I want to make sure that give a door, give a possibility to enter for whoever guest comes. And it's okay if you say, this is not my target group because of whatever reasons, then don't marketing. Sure. I don't want to say LGBT, but because it's a bit, but take families. If you don't have the setup to host families, don't market it to them. You know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean. At the end of the day, everyone has LGBTQ guests, whether you know it or not.
Yeah.
You do have LGBTQ guests. Okay, gays are traveling everywhere. They're traveling with their friends. They have great social network. They travel with allies. Are you trying to keep them and their allies happy? Absolutely, you should. But what's much more common these days, family travel, LGBTQ family travel, or parents who have children who identify on the LGBTQ spectrum. So it's in all walks of life, and you need to be able to talk that language or understand the nuances, gender identity, and pronouns, and make people feel welcome.
And it's crazy because it has been grown as well sometimes out of, I mean, the LGBT is part of the DNA of the social hub, it's part of my DNA, but sometimes still we don't see things. So I have a new intern, she started and say, hey, look, all the contracts that we do for staff members are gender neutral.
Yeah.
The only contracts which are very German are those intern contracts, and they are only made on he.
Yeah, yeah. Funny.
So I have never seen, obviously, this contract before, which is my mistake. But she told me we changed it immediately because that's exactly an intern today who is probably in their 20s, early 20s, has a different way of reading a contract. Like, I would have not even realized that, obviously. And it's quite interesting to see that we have to do that on both ends of the counter. You know, we have to be inclusive on both ends of the counter.
One of the statistics I always use is from Kantar Consulting, which is, and it was a US-based piece of research, but 8% of baby boomers identify as LGBTQ, whereas 31% of millennials identify as LGBTQ. Driving that is the Q. Like, don't put me in a box. I am whatever I want.
I saw the same statistic, and it's interesting because when you ask them, would you consider yourself LGBTIQ, then it's a less percentage. Like if you say, are you consider yourself as being queer?
Yeah.
Because a lot of them have not found probably the real direction yet. They just know probably I don't want to be put in a box. I don't want to probably be put in a box. It's quite interesting to see.
Fantastic. Love it.
Hey, looking back at the last proud experience, which was, again, super inspiring. I mean, I already told you, and I think I told you last year, I can remember every of the interviews that happened today, this year, last year, and all the years before, because everything was so inspiring. And so the program you curated, so kudos as well to you, to Ed, who is always Ed Salvato, who is always included there as well. It has been so inspiring, and it's so great to see how that reacts with other people. So this year we had Krissa Jackson. I mean, me as a basketball guy was like super happy with this super funny, funny partner. So if you don't follow Krissa Jackson on social media, you have to do it. It's always fun to watch her. And then we had, obviously Ray Brown, which I was, honored to be interviewing today, this year. I always say today, see, he's so present for me. A person that run seven triathlons on 7 days on seven continents, because he was like suffering from a mental disease, OCDs, and was trying to heal with that. But as well, the years before, how, I mean, you sit there and you see those speeches, you know who's coming. Yeah. But if you go out of the room and you see what they do with the people who listen to that, this is for me so crucial at the event.
So I feel like we try and tell a story every year. And rather than tick all boxes on the diversity spectrum. So in year one, we were really setting a scene, I think. And, you know, what we realized was that the trans movement was like the gay movement on steroids. So year one, we had Hannah and Jake Graff, a trans couple.
Jake, what, they were here as well this year, Jake, I saw.
Absolutely, and phenomenal. And they, you know, they had two babies now. They'd had a honeymoon in New York. So they were really at the forefront of leading some of the trans movement.
Sorry to interrupt, just to give the audience a quick idea. Hannah and Jack are a trans couple where I don't know how to say it correctly.
Trans woman
and a trans man together. And it's so interesting to talk to them as well, to listen to their problems. I mean, it's clear problems. So while she is the outgoing one, but can be still read as a man, he's a bit more introvert, but is a bit more in his gender.
Hannah made a point which really resonated with me, with the voice.
The voice, same.
trans woman, it takes a long time for the voice to change.
Yeah.
And she said she prefers not to speak.
And her example was the airport.
Yeah.
She said that at the airport is her husband who does all the talking and all the explanation. And then you think about you as a character are probably the one who wanted to do it. Like, I'm a talker, obviously.
Yeah.
I cannot think about standing back, but you do it. So you limit yourself in order to prevent the problems. That resonated with me massively. A lot as well.
Being silenced.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So we had that. And then we had the gay prince, Maharaja from India.
I remember.
Who at the time, India was decriminalizing homosexuality. So it was really of a moment. Then last year we wanted to increase the lesbian perspective and really, you know, have more diversity. So that's where Dame Kelly Holmes came in. And the fact that she was older, coming out in her 50s and really bursting out. So it was brilliant. She, you know, talked to so many different aspects.
Yeah.
The question of sports people and triumph and overcoming various different obstacles is quite an inspiring one. So that's where we...
And so many cameras are as well on you when you're in sports at all times. So that's as well a different thing and how that sets the plan. And this leads me to the question that I had earlier. If I look at the US market, I feel like the acceptance still of the event as well of the stories is way, I don't want to say better, but higher perceived. So I really feel like there is a more connection to the stories that we have. And if I look in into Germany, I don't want to look into Europe, but we're having discussions about if we use the pronouns that are requested, if our German speech dies, if we use a gender neutral speech. If you would understand German media in that extent, sometimes it is so complicated for us and I don't get it. So the Bavarians, for example, have prohibited, it's not allowed to use gender speech. Yeah, yeah. And then I think about in every of their buildings, they still have a cross. So,
of course.
What the hell?
I don't UK is not too dissimilar, to be honest with you. And it's media led. It's this kind of anti-woke attitude, which just kind of One of the guys asked a great question, and he was being provocative. One of the travel advisors, gay travel advisor, he said, is there a point where the LGBTQ plus alphabet becomes too long and becomes a negative impact as opposed to a positive one? I think he was making a point rather than asking a question. But there is an aspect for that. And I think at the end of the day, what matters is everyone's got a story. Everyone's got a personal story. Everyone has some connection, some impact with people who are either are on the LGBTQ spectrum or have some kind of lack of inclusion in their lives.
And now changing this into a political world where we see a shift into conservative governments literally everywhere. I cannot believe that Trump is still a topic somewhere. I cannot believe this, but he's still out there and maybe again a president. We have a shift in Germany. We have a shift. We had a shift already in the UK, France, Italy, all the big countries. Yeah. How do you think does that affect the LGBTI travel, especially if safety is such an important thing?
Massively. I mean, firstly, I'm smiling because Brazil, we went
you,
went,
you went back.
Thank you.
You went out of Bolsonaro.
Exactly.
But he's still as well there with his sons.
Yeah, but he's not doing a Trump. He's not coming back. So we're fine.
How old is he?
I think we managed to prosecute him and and say he really cannot run again.
Can you give advices to other states how to do that? I have a couple of candidates to be...
100%. Yeah, no. But take Hungary, for example.
Yeah.
Hungary is a destination that LGBTQ travelers are like, no, not now. It's not a place we feel comfortable going to.
Is that something, sorry to interrupt, that your travel advisors as well are sharing when they give out the destinations? Because it's so important to bring
it
this.
It is part of the conversation. It's definitely part of the conversation. I mean, we there's still an awful lack of knowledge, for example. Jamaica, unfortunately, I mentioned in my opening speech, old colonial laws, British colonial laws, which have left such a deep ingrained culture of or homophobia, which makes Jamaica still a place that you would not recommend to a gay couple to go and hold hands. Qatar, we still hear horror stories in Qatar of people being purposely targeted on Grindr or whatever it may be, whereas Dubai is getting better and improving. At the same time. So yeah, very, very conscious of all of that. We're here on this fabulous holiday in Berlin and we're off to Italy and London. We were just in Sitges. At the same time, my partner's best friend is doing a trip in Turkey and Albania.
Brave.
Are you okay? You
know, he's just checking on the way. He's as well gay or?
He is gay. Solo traveler as well. So we're checking him in with him all the way because they're not as accepting as a place like Berlin.
But this is probably as well the moment where those luxury brands can create safe spots by
100%.
Adding a premium to whatever they do by training people and stuff.
100%. So we do have Jamaican products that exhibit at the show. We have a lot of Maldivian products, hotels that come and participate at Proud Experiences. And I massively believe the private sector has a role to play in influencing governments.
Tourism is money, eh?
Yeah.
We should not forget that.
And the vast majority of destinations that have laws against homosexuality are places that rely entirely on tourism.
I remember there was a statistic on a comparison between Thailand and Singapore.
Yeah.
It was by a German consultancy. They produced it a couple of years ago, and they put the value of the country value from Thailand in perspective of the value of Singapore at the period where they changed the law. So Singapore went a bit more strict. While Thailand opened up, and it was interesting to see the percentage increase, because what countries might not see is not only the tourism that gives them money, it's as well the people who come to work there.
Yeah.
If you are a highly paid, qualified person and you have no kids, even though we see a change in the LGBTI world there, but if you have no kids and you can go to Singapore and work there and you feel like you can be who you are, that gives you a reason to go there, right? It's not only the tourism. Some of them experience a country before moving there.
Yeah. I have lots of great friends of mine who are vice presidents of amazing hotel companies who have been asked to move to Singapore and run the head offices there. And they're categorically, no, I'm not a gay couple going to live in Singapore. So they're losing rich talent. And one of the other points, on a personal level, talking about Qatar and Dubai, we flew out to Asia a couple of times, first time on Emirates, second time on Qatar. Stopped over in Dubai on the way there. We used an on-the-ground tour operator, booked us a hotel, a safe space, booked us a double bed, no problems. Via Qatar, we stopped in Doha and we organized it ourselves. Just to be on the safe side, we booked two separate beds, etc. So that's the difference between using a trusted travel advisor or not, I would say.
It's crazy. Would you limit yourself, probably personal question, with your partner when you're somewhere in these countries, not to hold hands, not to share?
Yeah, 100%.
That's crazy. I cannot believe this. You're together so long. And
to be honest, we're together 10 and a half years. And then place...
You know, I'm a person. Here. I'm half a year together with somebody, and I cannot stop holding hands. Yeah. You know, and then what? How do you do that?
Berlin is really the first place we've actively had any public display of affection on the streets.
Crazy.
Yeah,
it was a topic as well. I remember with other partners on the experience how to be in public, and as well I remember on stage this question that people limit themselves of not being so effective, which is actually not the best thing to do. In my opinion, what do you see coming up next? You mentioned a couple of countries as well in your opening speech, from the Arabic countries. Yeah. So, is that something you see that will be jumping? I don't want to say jumping on a train. Don't want to make them a bandwagon fan. But is that something you would?
Goodness, great question. What are we going to be looking? We're going to go back to next year. The story. We're going to talk more trends next year. Mm-hmm. I think it's such an important question. I've got friends who have twin children, boy and a girl, the boy identifies as trans.
It's a big topic. We saw it as well here because families, for example, were always excluded out of the LGBT. So it was always a segment that did not necessarily include families in the same extent. Now we see elderly couples coming with elderly gay couples coming with their grandchildren.
Yeah.
It's a different travel all of a sudden because the story gets worse to explain. If you have two elderly gentlemen traveling with two young girls.
Exactly that. Yeah. My niece turned 15 yesterday and I promised her on her 16th birthday that she can come to Brazil. I said, she's not coming before 16 because I'm sure immigration will be like, what the hell? You're importing this young child.
From England.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the new world. Exactly. That's the new...
And parents and grandparents want more than anyone that their children and grandchildren feel safe.
Yeah. And we saw as well in Berlin, there is a place called a Rainbow Family Center that we support already a while. So we saw the trend already coming because there's a lot of topics as well within the family. So not only traveling wise, but as well living wise. So I really feel like going on holiday in a rainbow setup is even
beautiful, no?
Beautiful, but as well more difficult because you need probably to check way more and to explain way 100%. More. I remember I travel with my kid without the mother. I need to have a written permission wherever I go. Yeah. So
true.
Gets more difficult when you travel with two male or female. So.
Yeah, this friend who has a boy who identifies as trans goes by the name of Jazzy. Mm. But of course, the passport says Johnny. All those kind of things. But I've seen the hotels do amazing things like write Jazzy in the sand on the beach in front of their villa. Incredible. Nice. Yeah.
Cool. I feel like sometimes the easiest approach for hospitality companies is to just trust, what's there. And sometimes I remember always the story of writing a treatment to Mr. and Mrs. Where you already saw it's a Mr. and a Mr. Uh-huh. So why would you expect a mistake there? And even if you... I would rather take, if you use the wrong pronoun, it happens to me as well. Sometimes I choose not Mr., I choose Mrs. because it's said first. If you do it yourself and I would get a letter and it says Mrs., I would not be pissed, but the other way around, I would, because one is my mistake and the other one is an assumption. And I said it on stage.
Sure.
Assumption is always making an ass out of you and me because it's assuming. So I really think that's a good advice to give. So hey, back to the trends. If you didn't really cover there, but do you feel like your existing partners could be focusing a bit more on those countries that are probably harder to get, or is there something you from your side, or we from our side, could do to include more properties from areas that are not the safest?
Yeah, we're seeing a huge number of properties from Japan, for example, and we're seeing IGLTA are doing their conference in Japan.
Yeah.
So change is happening 100%. We've seen Hong Kong do stuff as well. But so much of it is political. And it's political swing and people playing party politics or ideology with LGBTQ. Florida's out for us.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Just for you guys out there, Florida has had a new law. And it's funny because last year, on the day before the Pride Experience, I think the bill was passed. It's not allowed. Don't say gay, but bill. It's not. Drags are not allowed in public.
Perform in public in front of children.
We're talking about Miami. Florida, Miami. That's the cultural thing for me.
Exactly. Crazy. Absolute madness. Mm.
But I asked Dan when he was there if he can see an effect already, but they say no. But I feel like a lot of people will not go there.
Sure. I used to go to Miami every year. Ironically, it's become less gay, but they still celebrate. Like the drag bar has become one of the most commercialized places I've ever seen. So good for them. You know, they're making money out of the straights. Love it.
Hey, before we go, well, it's basically we're coming to the final bits. If you would have one person free that we will help you to get on stage at the Pride Experience, who would you want to have? Is there somebody that you probably had all your dreams already, but is there somebody that you would say, Smack community, make it possible?
Great question. I know my answer for my luxury travel industry world, which is the guy who created SH Hotels, One Hotels.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I am with you. And I it's funny. I have it somewhere in my notes because you did the event in New York at One Brooklyn, at the Brooklyn Bridge. I loved this hotel and I'm a hospitality nerd and I watched the presentation of SH during the Pride Experience this year. This companies, I followed everybody on LinkedIn. Yeah. If one day they open something here, I might go back to a suit.
They live what they say.
Yeah.
They really are a whole brand based on values, which is incredible. And they deliver luxury and sustainability and community at the same time, which is phenomenal. And the guy is fascinating, but quite reclusive, or certainly not, doesn't do a lot as well. So he would be very cool. And I've completely got a blank. I want to say it's Rick something or other, but he was behind Starwood Capital.
Yeah.
Anyway, from an LGBTQ perspective, I had a couple of people on my list this year, which was Colton Underwood and Guy Kenworthy, who have done a nice piece on Netflix called Coming Out Colton.
Yeah.
Great piece, but I think we nailed it with Raymond this year. It was amazing. Personal icons. Stephen Fry, what a legend. Stephen Fry, British comedian, who even interviewed Bolsonaro years and years and years ago, and I posted the video when it was election time about going around the world being gay and the acceptance of being gay. He's just a smart guy. He would be very cool.
Stephen Fry, wherever you are, you have to watch this episode. I mean, I promise you, you're the better comedian, but we'll make it happen. We have a fun on stage. Simon, ending up, you already said that you're traveling a bit. So it's Pride Month. I always say months because in Germany, I feel like it's, and it's great. It's I feel like sometimes it's 3 months of Pride. Yeah. So you're traveling through and keep on traveling. Is there any Pride event that you look forward to? What you say, this is a must-see for me in the next
episode? So we're on a big gay Euro Pride tour. Actually, my husband did São Paulo Pride whilst I was in West Hollywood Pride.
Okay.
We met in Sitges for Sitges Pride.
Okay.
We're here in Berlin, which doesn't need a Pride because it's so proud anyway.
Ours is at end of July. We're having the CSD auf der Spree, which is our boat canal Pride, and then followed with our big CSD Christopher Street Day Parade, nice. Which is huge, usually roughly a million. Wow. So it's a big thing. If it's not raining, it's quite,
yeah,
it's a place to be.
That's huge. Yeah. São Paulo, I think, is 2 million, which is the biggest in the world, which is, and then we're going to Palermo, okay. Which Palermo Pride. So that'll be interesting for us.
Italy, yeah, that's gonna be really
exactly.
Funny.
I'm not sure it'll be a million, but
if you make it a million, I want to go there too.
And then we end up in London for Pride as well.
When is London Pride?
30th of June, the day before, the 29th. So the last Saturday in June, which I've been to before. I came out in 1997 in Manchester at the same time as Queer as Folk was launched on, you know, Canal Street in Manchester was so iconic. And it was such a good moment for Manchester that for me it will always be my pride, because that's what Pride does. Takes a teenager who had felt alone for a long time and shows them that there are thousands of people that look like him.
You are not alone. With this, I want to end it, Simon. It has been a massive pleasure. Probably you have realized that I could have sit here longer and longer, because this is really topics that are so close to my heart. Thank you for being here in Berlin. Thank you for being with us, and thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you for being an amazing ally, amongst many other things.
Thanks.
That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at SMAC with us by checking out our website at smac.media, or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.